All right, so we're back at Build 2012 in beautiful, rainy Redmond. We're in the Visitor Center. We're with the great Anders Halsberg. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, you bet. Always a pleasure.
Excellent. So we're going to talk TypeScript, which you just announced and released.
About a month ago. Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. So let's give us a, what is TypeScript? Let's get this rolling.
Well, I mean, the one sentence description is it's a language for application scale JavaScript development.
Yeah.
Basically, over the last 5 years or so, customers and even internal teams have increasingly told us that it's just too hard to build large JavaScript applications. JavaScript was never intended for 100,000 lines app. It was more like 100 line app. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And now we've like gone up three orders of magnitude. Yet the language doesn't have any kind of structuring means like classes or modules. You know, it doesn't have any static typing off of which we can power rich IDEs. And really, that's what powers the rich IDEs today: you know, code completion, refactoring, code navigation.
Sure.
You know, find all references. And so TypeScript is basically, you know, an idea that we had that what if we could add those things to JavaScript without sacrificing any of the inherent advantages of JavaScript, like cross-platform, open standards, web, and so forth.
And lots of libraries and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, so TypeScript, basically, it starts with JavaScript, and it's a superset of JavaScript that has classes, modules, optional static typing, arrow functions, REST parameters, a bunch of the things that are already proposed for ECMAScript 6, the next version of JavaScript. But the beauty of it is that you can use those at development time, but then it all compiles to just plain old JavaScript that runs everywhere.
Excellent. So one of the quick questions I would have is, what did you learn about JavaScript in this venture that you went on?
I learned that there's a kernel of beautiful functional programming buried deep in the bowels of JavaScript. You know, the notion that functions are first class and that you can make closure over local variables and have functions within functions within functions.
Nice.
And so forth, and all the things that really are at the foundation of functional programming languages are in JavaScript and are done very nicely. But then there are a bunch of other things around it that are maybe not so fortunate, you know, that people get hung up on all the time, you know, like the accidental injection of global variables just because you misspelled something or whatever, the this pointer,
sure,
you know, being wrong sometimes, or you, I mean, you name it. There's a whole list of them, right?
Sure.
But it turns out that with something like TypeScript, you can actually like build a language that at compile time, at development time, catches almost all of those.
Nice.
And then just spits out the JavaScript that looks like you just wrote it. Do you know what I mean? And
absolutely.
So that's where we're going.
Yeah. So this is Channel 9 Live. This is all about the people out there and your questions. So now we're going to get right to them.
All right.
So Jinishan's asks, is it possible to use TypeScript for ASP.NET code behind MVC apps?
It is possible to use TypeScript on the server with frameworks like Node.js. Putting it behind ASP.NET, you would need to somehow interoperate then from the CLR to some JavaScript code. That's probably a little more complex. You know, I would say it's a better way to use it in an ASP.NET setting is to write the client side of the app in TypeScript and then have ASP.NET on the server.
Absolutely.
But you can run it on the server using Node.js, for example.
Awesome. And the second part of his question was, what about for WinJS and Windows 8 store apps?
Yeah, you know, I feel like TypeScript and WWAs or Windows web applications are like, I mean, it's like a marriage made in heaven, you know. And we actually have a sample in the TypeScript distribution of a WWA app. The thing that's so neat about it is that all of the new WinRT APIs are described by metadata. Actually, it's the same metadata format as .NET. But that means that we can automatically generate TypeScript declaration files from the WinRT metadata.
Nice.
So now not all of this isn't in place yet, but that's definitely where we're going to go. You know, you reference some WinRT assembly, and we can automatically give you the declaration, so statement completion just works,
awesome,
you know, right out of the box without you having to do anything. So that's great. You know, whenever there's a source of metadata that we can get at and automatically generate the declaration files is just sort of an automatic win for TypeScript because we can offer much better tooling experience.
Totally. Tug Burke asks, will TypeScript get an async language feature similar to async await?
Yeah, good question. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of async await, yes. Obviously, since we did it in C#. I think the things that that we need to think about deeply for TypeScript is a couple of things. One thing is that one of our value propositions right now with TypeScript is that the code that you write in TypeScript and the generated JavaScript are very, very similar. Mm. You can sort of see your code. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's really just the structuring that goes around it that will change, you know, the class, the module, and so forth. Mm. Now, with await and async, we would have to do some massive rewriting of your code. So you might be able to write some beautiful code, but if you ever were to look at the generated JavaScript, it would look very different.
Okay.
And it would be very hard to debug through that code without source maps and whatever. And so you sort of end up being further away from the eventual artifact. And to some people, that is a detractor.
Sure.
And we need to be sensitive to that. I think the other thing is that await, in a sense, at least the way it's implemented in C# currently, requires everything for all of the asynchronous APIs to be encapsulated in a future or task or promise, that's sort of the words that JavaScript uses, in
sure.
a promise model. But that's actually not the case for most JavaScript APIs. They use callbacks today.
Mm.
And that means that it's that now we sort of face an unpleasant choice there. Either we have to go wrap all of the standard JavaScript APIs in promises so you can then await them,
mm.
or we have to come up with a different model for propagating exceptions. Manually, you know, and therefore
sure.
you'd only get half of the bang for the buck. And so these are just some of the challenges that, I mean, I'm not saying that we'll never do this. I'd love to find a way to do it. And
mm-hmm.
certainly, you know, ECMAScript 6 has a proposal to do iterators right now, which would allow us to generate code that's much closer to what you wrote mm-hmm. by using an iterator underneath. And that's something that we'll want to look at.
Cool.
But that, of course, would mean that we could only generate ECMAScript 6 code, which in turn is out in the future, and so
exactly.
so lots of considerations.
Certainly.
Yeah. But it's on our radar, and it's clearly one of the things that people vote for on the TypeScript issues.
Oh, I'm sure.
So yeah,
it's a wonderful feature.
Yeah.
I wish we had it in other languages as well.
I know. Well, we'll hopefully get there. Yeah.
Good. So Vivek Pai, well-known Niner, thanks for coming on. He asked, do you see future languages compiling to TypeScript?
Do I see languages compiling to TypeScript? Probably not to TypeScript. I certainly see future languages compiling to JavaScript, since that is, in a sense, the the only cross-platform lingua franca that we have today. Right.
Okay.
I mean, even Java, which was conceived as being cross-platform, is no longer cross-platform. JavaScript is that game, you know, in town.
Totally.
But compiling to TypeScript, sure, you could do that, but then why would you compile to TypeScript and then compile that to, you know, why not just go straight to JavaScript, I would think.
Sure.
You know, I do think one thing that people will likely do, and that certainly looking at the number of forks that have been created off of TypeScript, people might experiment with TypeScript and add their own stuff to the language, you know, and we certainly see a lot of forks off of our open source depot. So
that's awesome. I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So you know, because you guys went out in the open, which
right.
is a brilliant idea,
mm-hmm.
and so you are seeing a lot
it's
of
not
forks.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It's a so no, seriously.
Sure.
So you don't think it's a brilliant idea?
No, no, it is. But you make it sound like we were the first to do it.
I mean, no.
Obviously,
but, Microsoft isn't known for coming out with a developer preview of something out in the open.
Right.
But so, are you seeing a lot of forks and a lot of
we're seeing quite a few. Yeah, I think there are. It's somewhere between 50 and 70 forks that
nice.
You know, as I recall. Yeah, and those are just the ones off of CodePlex.
Mm.
Who knows how many there are on GitHub? You know, we don't track those. So there's now a lot of these are just for people experimenting or whatever. But you never know. You know?
Right on.
So yeah.
Cool. So it's nice to see the Niners coming out of the woodwork. Zippy V wants to know if classes and other TypeScript features are coming in ECMAScript 6. Why not wait for that?
Why not wait for it?
Yeah.
Well, I think there are several reasons. First of all, ECMAScript 6 is not set to be ratified. The earliest it would be ratified is in December of 2013.
Mm.
But But the committee, I believe, has said that they may be as much as 6 months further out from that. So now we're talking mid-2014. Mm. Now, and that's when it gets ratified. Then there's a question of when is it actually deployed enough that you can start writing apps for it. Now we're talking many years from now. Mm-hmm. The advantage of TypeScript is you can have those features now and use them down level on ECMAScript 3 compliant browsers. I mean, even browsers that don't do ECMAScript 5 will run your code. So,
Excellent. So
that's what it's about. It's about getting these features today, not sometime in the future.
Perfectly, and in some sense, vetting the features to see whether or not people.
Well, I mean that's sort of it's a nice side effect of it, right?
Sure.
That you know, because we are aligning ourselves with the ECMAScript 6 proposals for classes and modules and arrow functions and REST parameters, we do end up vetting the design, and we are also finding issues with.
Right
with
on.
The design, like, for example, you know, in a constructor, if you don't write a call to super, to your super or base class constructor, then in ECMAScript 6, at least as it's proposed currently, your base class constructor will never be called. But people often forget to write that.
Sure.
Base class, especially if they're coming from Java or C Sharp, where that call is automatic. And so we found within hours of putting out internally a version of TypeScript that had the ES6 class model that people were like, whoa, what happened here? My code doesn't work anymore. Well, it's because they were forgetting to call the base class constructor. Now, what we can then do in TypeScript is we can validate that somewhere in the constructor there's a call, right? But having done this actually, you know, definitely informs the ES6 design that, you know, since a browser couldn't, or since an ECMAScript 6 implementation couldn't necessarily do that kind of validation, that maybe one should think about other designs here,
yeah,
you know.
Totally.
So we are learning things about the ES6 designs through our implementation.
Great. All right. So Vasily asks, what about the debugging of the TypeScript code itself?
Right.
Will there be support for stepping into TypeScript code?
Right. Yes, there will, and there is some already. But let me preface it by saying that because the code we generate is so close to the code you wrote, it's actually entirely meaningful to just debug the generated JavaScript. And you it's not like you can't recognize it. It looks exactly like what you wrote. Mm. Now that said, we do support generating source maps.
Cool.
Which is an experimental feature that's implemented in some browsers. It's currently not implemented in IE. And we are also working on a debugging experience in Visual Studio. So, you know, when this is a final product, there will absolutely be a very nice debugging experience.
Yeah. Excellent. You know, that's an excellent point. I think a lot of us in the excitement of this forget that this is a developer preview.
This is a preview, yeah.
Yeah. It's alpha,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. We,
a little bit better than alpha.
There's a reason we named it or gave it the version number 0.8, right? I mean, it's not 1.0 yet.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
All right, so we sort of already talked about this, Suresh, about the WinJS. So WinJS and TypeScript are very good friends. You mentioned the WinMD. So yes, you can use TypeScript to build Windows apps, so start building the apps. Tom asks, can I do anything in TypeScript that is possible in JavaScript? So anything that's possible in JavaScript, can I do in TypeScript?
Yes, because TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. Now, that said, there are lots of things you can do in JavaScript that the TypeScript compiler will complain about. So yes, you can do it, but you might see some errors reported because, you know, in a sense, TypeScript is about finding the meaningful semantic subset of JavaScript that actually that actually does what you want it to do, right? Because anything is possible in JavaScript. You can take two empty object literals and put a plus operator in between them, and you get, I forget whether you get a zero or a nan or something, you get something like that. Who ordered that, right? I mean, now in TypeScript, that's an error. So we'll give you an error, but we will actually emit the code that you wrote. It's it's an interesting design point in TypeScript that the type checking is actually a completely separate phase from the emitting. So no matter how many errors you have, if you are, if we can, if you're syntactically correct, that is, if we can parse and build a parse tree, then we can also emit the JavaScript. Now, the type checking then is just something that we do on top, and then we give you a bunch of errors, but will it, whether or not those errors are there, will emit the same code.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the two things are separate, and that's actually an interesting design point. So you can run your apps even though you get errors.
Got it.
As long as the errors are not parse errors, where literally you're syntactically incorrect. But in that case, you wouldn't have been able to run the JavaScript either.
Sure.
So, but you know, as long as those are not there, we can produce JavaScript, even though you may see hundreds of errors from the type checker, and you know.
But that's one of the, actually, as you mentioned, that's one of the great points about what this is. It's it adds structure to an already existing language.
Right.
So I get to use classes and interfaces and modules, but those aren't things that are actually in the output.
You get to pretend that you have classes and interfaces and modules, even though you don't. All you have is functions and objects, right?
I mean, right on.
Yeah.
And it's the power of JavaScript that enables you to do this.
Yes, and that is, it is. And it is impressive power, absolutely.
Rock and roll. Yeah. You heard that from Anders Halsberg, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so Puneet asks, what if any testing frameworks are expected to ship, specifically targeting TypeScript?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, so I know there are some out there in open source, but their names elude me at this point. But I know that within days of us announcing TypeScript, there were some of the testing frameworks that announced support for it. And I know, for example, like one of the JavaScript IDEs out there, the Cloud9 IDE, they announced TypeScript support within less than 48 hours. You know, and there was a book on Amazon within 48 hours.
Amazing.
It's web speed here. You know?
I'm telling you, it was very impressive when that was announced. Like, it was just a monster. I mean, there's a thread on Channel 9 on your wonderful lecture. I think there's like 300 comments right now or more.
Is it really?
Yeah, so it's impressive.
And
350,000 views.
I saw there was a lot. It's up there in the top 25 now, I think.
Rock and roll. Yeah. So Torgan wants to know, what are the advantages of TypeScript compared to Dart? So it took this long for you guys to ask about Dart? All right. So let's talk about that.
I think, you know, TypeScript and Dart are fundamentally very different creatures. You know, they aim to solve fundamentally different problems, or you could argue they aim to solve the same problem in fundamentally different ways.
Okay.
You know, TypeScript is about strengthening JavaScript with some things that are missing, like classes, modules, optional static typing, but it's a superset of JavaScript, and it works with all existing JavaScript libraries, and it compiles to JavaScript, and it's really a member of that ecosystem. Dart is about engineering a new language and a new runtime that so happens to be similar to JavaScript, but it's different. It's a different language, has different semantics, it's a different runtime. It can cross-compile to JavaScript, but whenever you try to replicate one set of semantics on another runtime, there's always cost. And they acknowledge, too, that there is cost to emulating Dart's semantics on JavaScript, on a JavaScript runtime.
Sure.
So Dart is about building a different mousetrap, if you will, where we're trying to play in the same sandbox with TypeScript.
Good. I think that's the definitive answer. What about browser compatibility? Does it work with all browsers? So any browser that can run JavaScript, TypeScript can target that.
And you know, we have compiler switches that allow you to target ECMAScript 3 or ECMAScript 5. So certain features like property accessors, for example, or get or set accessors are a feature of ECMAScript 5. And we have them in the syntax, and if you enable ECMAScript 5, then we can generate code for them. Otherwise, we'll give you error saying we can't emit this for ECMAScript 3. So that's sort of an example of where we will target particular versions. But you can if you target ECMAScript 3, it'll run pretty much anywhere. It'll run on your phone. It'll run everywhere.
Yeah. Awesome. So Pavel asks, and this is this kind of will tie back to writing Windows Store apps, Pavel. What is the best way to interoperate with the CLR from TypeScript? So, I mean, that's his question.
Right.
Sort of.
Well, so we the interoperability technologies that we have built into to Windows are COM. You know, that's one way you can interoperate. Or if you're on Windows 8, then WinRT is an excellent way of interoperating. Yes. In fact, there are lots of hybrid apps out there today already in the App Store that are built partially in C# and partially in JavaScript, or partially in you know, C++ or JavaScript, and they use WinRT as the interop mechanism.
Absolutely, and that's like that's COM for free.
Well, I mean, WinRT is sort of the evolution of COM, right? I mean, it's modern COM.
Totally.
Yeah.
And by, you were actually, you know, being in DevDiv, you kind of worked closely with Windows and
I worked closely
design.
With those guys. Yeah.
Thus,
yeah,
WinMD.
Yeah, well, that's right. How the metadata. Yeah. Well, we certainly, you know, we all agreed to, instead of inventing a new metadata format, how about using one that we already have a bunch of tooling for?
So, totally.
Yeah.
So Saju is asking, isn't it a problem that the computer industry doesn't have a better solution than JavaScript to use for the web? And I mean, it sort of comes down to, I mean, that, what he's basically asking is, I mean, JavaScript is fundamentally flawed in certain ways, yet one of the flaws it doesn't have is being used in the real world. It's massively successful.
Well, so it's funny. Show me a successful technology that isn't flawed in some way, right? I mean, HTML, flawed. Mm. You know, Windows, yes, it has flaws, right? Mm. But it is in use on millions of computers everywhere. And you know, the technologies that are beautiful are the ones that have no adoption, because every version you can make them better or whatever, right? There's no backwards compatibility to worry about. There are no warts. There are no old apps that do this, that, or the other. But once you get users, it comes with the responsibility not to break their code every time. And that means you end up accruing more and more things that if you started fresh today, you wouldn't have. But that's the price of success, in a sense, right? And JavaScript, in a sense, suffers from that. But it's a nice problem to have, because it means that it means that you have users, right?
Yes, and it certainly does.
Yeah.
So now this is a question I'm sure you'll appreciate, Anders. I mean, Link was a wonderful addition to the managed stack,
right?
And it's highly used by you know, everyone uses Link. I don't know anyone who doesn't use Link for something. Mm-hmm. You're always interoperating with data in some format. So the question from Tugberk is: TypeScript plus Link equals crazy delicious. What's the story there?
Well, I mean, it's certainly. I mean, there is actually already a library I know of, at least one out there called JS Link that implements a link-like library, you know. But even if you take libraries like Underscore or whatever, they are all very similar, you know, and they have a lot of the similar capabilities. So you can do a lot of that stuff. Now, Link, in some ways, took it a little bit further by putting query comprehension syntax into the language, for example, and adding expression trees, and you know, and that might be overkill for JavaScript, I think, possibly, you know. So, but you can do a lot of it already, and I think, you know, certainly ECMAScript 6 seems to take some inspiration, I think, from our work and other work in functional programming languages now that there's a proposal that looks like it'll be adopted to introduce arrow functions, which we in C# call lambdas. They have exactly the same syntax as C# lambda, so it's like the fat arrow. And for TypeScript, we actually do the same level. In fact, we do even more, the same level of or more type inference around lambdas that we do in C#.
Nice.
So you get to write them and the types flow through them, you know, like if you have like the equivalent of a map function or a select, as we call it in Link, right, where you know, you map from one element type to another, you know, our type checker can follow that, and so when you dot on the next one, you have the right type and so forth. Well, at least it will be once we add generics, which is something that isn't in TypeScript currently.
Sure. And we can get to the future maybe towards the end.
Sure,
That'll be fun to talk about.
Right.
So, Nodir Turikalov asks, will TypeScript support typed hash? An object with property values of a certain type.
Object with property values of a certain type. I'm not sure I
typed
understand
hash. Wait, were we
means.
In Amsterdam?
So,
seriously, I mean.
Oh, I think. Okay, no, I think I know.
Okay.
I think I know what he's talking about. So he's talking about if you're using an object as a hash table, you know, by adding properties to it, and then you want each of the properties to have a certain type. You can actually do some of that already using index signatures, where you can declare an object to have be indexable by string and contains a HTML elements.
Okay.
And then when you index into it, we will indeed give you back HTML elements. So there are already examples of that in the TypeScript code base. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for the great question. And of course, we can't talk about TypeScript if you don't talk about CoffeeScript. So Oscar, that's his question. Compare the two. Compare contrast.
Okay. So I think I'd say there are two fundamental differences. Difference number one, CoffeeScript is a different language from JavaScript. No JavaScript code works if as CoffeeScript. You'd have to rewrite your JavaScript code to CoffeeScript if you want to build on it then, right? Where TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript, so you'd basically just start with the JavaScript you already have, and then you can add to it.
Totally.
That's difference number one. Difference number two is that TypeScript introduces optional static typing and great tooling based off of that. Mm. CoffeeScript doesn't have any static typing at all. So it is just as dynamic as JavaScript, and therefore, in a sense, suffers from the same fundamental glass ceilings on what you can do in an IDE. You know, I mean, like when you're typing code and you go foo dot.
Yes. You know,
depending on what foo is. Now, as foo so happens to be a global object that you can somehow figure out and fake instantiate and get some instance, or maybe you're doing this at runtime, then sure, you can ask that instance, what are your properties, and you can show some help.
Okay.
Of course, you still can't figure out what the parameters to the functions are, because there's no way of figuring that out at runtime in JavaScript. Mm. So, but let's say that you're just writing function f that has a foo parameter, but you don't see any calls to f yet, because you haven't written them yet. How do you know what foo is? Mm-hmm. There's no way you could ever offer anyone any help at that point.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? That's just a fundamental impossibility. But if you add a type annotation, you can. And that's what static typing does, right? And plus, static typing can also reveal type information that isn't present at runtime. Like, there's a bunch of properties here, but which ones of these properties are functions? Okay, that's good to know. Which one, and what parameters do these functions take, and what do they return?
Mm-hmm.
You can't learn that by looking at a dynamic JavaScript object. There is no way at runtime to obtain that information. So,
So
all of these things are possible if you have static type information at development time. And so, anyway, that's a long way to answer here.
You know,
but that is like fundamental difference number two. So one is it superset of JavaScript or not, and the other is static typing.
Right on. Now, real briefly, in looking at sort of the syntactic decisions you made as a language designer, the reason that you did, you know, name colon type was because it's statically optionally typed, right?
Well, yeah.
If it wasn't optionally typed, could you have done it the way that
you could have done anything you want, right? I mean, but the question is, how usable is it, right? I think when something is optional, postfix notation tends to be a little less invasive than prefix notation, because you start with the thing that's always there, and then it's optionally followed by something, as opposed to here's something, and if there's something after it, then this is the optional thing, and then that's the thing that's on. You know, that's a little backwards. The other reason is that there's already some precedent for this in the JavaScript community, like ActionScript uses postfix notation.
Okay.
The ECMAScript 4 proposals that didn't actually come to fruition use this syntax. And it works just in many ways. It is just more compositional than the prefix notation.
Totally.
So yeah, it's easier to implement a parser for it. It just you know.
And I think you're right.
I mean, personally, coming from a Pascal background, I kind of like that.
I'm sure you do.
Man,
loops.
Yeah.
All right. So Nodir asks, will TypeScript try to solve the problem of absence of block scope for variables in JavaScript?
It's something we've thought about, and we could certainly do some validation in the compiler. But ultimately, you know, the only way you can inject new meaning for a name inside a function is by making a nested function. Mm. Where, and so in JavaScript, the way you can emulate, you know, nested blocks with the same local variable name but a different meaning is by injecting a local function that you immediately call.
Okay.
And then you change the meaning of the local variable in there. Mm. But there's some cost associated with that. You don't want to be doing that in a loop. And so, yes, we could do certain things, but it would cost too much. But we can certainly do some validation. We do some validation. We certainly could do more in the area of definite assignment analysis and you know, and just analyzing whether you have multiple meanings for the same name, you know, or redefinitions and so forth. So that, yeah, that's what compilers can do, but we can't solve the whole problem in just in TypeScript.
Sure, understand. So Tom would like to know, is there a way to compile C sharp to TypeScript?
No, there's a way to compile C sharp to JavaScript.
Yes,
that's called ScriptSharp.
ScriptSharp,
It's an excellent project. We have lots of we have some internal use of that. There's a bunch of external use of it that I know of. That I would say is probably if you want to make JavaScript from your C sharp, that's what I would do.
Okay.
Now you could argue that you could then take that and try to make TypeScript out of that JavaScript, but the JavaScript that gets generated by ScriptSharp tends to look automatically generated, so it's probably not where you would start. You know.
Yeah.
I mean the big difference or the big fundamental problem there is that whilst the languages are not, you know, like in structure are not all that far from each other, the frameworks are completely different, right? Mm. And those tend to be, you know, everything that goes in your curlies is like applications of the frameworks, right? And so it's much, much harder to change that. ScriptSharp doesn't try to change that. It comes just with a .NET emulation library, if you will, right? So,
sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I mean, I would just say to the questioner, I mean, in this modern world of building, I mean, we are at build, right? And we just announced Windows 8. Mm-hmm. So in a Windows 8, in a Windows Store app environment, you could easily be, I'm going to write an HTML5 app, I'm going to do it in TypeScript,
right?
And I'm going to write a C-sharp component that I'm going to seamlessly interoperate with to do something. I'm going to write a C++ component that's going to do some image processing for me. And it's all very natural in your TypeScript to interoperate.
Absolutely. Now, I will say there that it's not, so first of all, this is a preview of TypeScript.
Of course. Right?
So there is no project template for TypeScript yet or whatever. We have one example of an app in there, and you can sort of manually construct a project, but it takes a bit more work than now than it's going
to
eventually.
Okay.
The other thing I would say is that, yes, you can build hybrid apps, but if you can build your app in just one language, you're not gonna have to pay the price of interoperating over some memory barrier boundary. You know, I mean, like if you have a JavaScript and a C-sharp component in an app, that also means you have two garbage collectors in your app and you have marshalling going on in between them. Every piece of data that gets passed needs to be copied. So there's some overhead. Now that may work just fine for compute engines that just is gonna grind on a big set of data that they load and then deliver a result that JavaScript then puts in a UI, dandy.
Yes.
But if it's like a super chatty API that's like, you know, handing gobs of data back and forth, then you do a lot better by staying within the box, so to speak, within one of the boxes. And they're all excellent boxes to stay in. I mean, there's so.
No, that's a great point. I mean, we sometimes I think we do forget in this new world that, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, you have different memory. So you have native apps can be accessing different memory. It's going to be reference counted. And then you have a garbage collector. The whole two garbage collector thing just kind of made me go, oh, man. But I get it.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
So Alex asks, are Office 2013 and SharePoint, so basically Office APIs, are they, can you be TypeScript enabled? They're already JavaScript enabled, so it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah. No, you can target them, and I mean, of course, again, it's more a question of what kind of tooling experience do we have for that, and that's something that we're working towards, but it's not something that we have yet.
Okay.
But Yeah.
Rock and roll. So Fian wants to know, are there any plans to ship base libraries in TypeScript to deliver a common foundation? So I just want TS libraries. I don't need the JS libraries.
No, I would say the answer is unequivocally no. Mm. There are no such plans. TypeScript does not have a runtime library. TypeScript's runtime library is JavaScript's runtime library. And therefore also all of the frameworks that are out there in the industry, like, you know, jQuery underscore Backbone, Express, Node.js, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's the beauty of it, right? Is that it's not a new world. It's the world that you know and love if you're a JavaScript programmer, but with industrial strength tooling and language concepts that allow you to structure your apps, right? That's what we deliver, and we're very conscious of that. We're not going to try to make a TypeScript framework or whatever. What we will try to do is work with all of the people building frameworks to produce declaration files that add the static type information for those frameworks. Mm. And we've already come a long way with that. I mean, and this is just work that the community has done. Now there are there's a project I think called Definitely Typed out there that has about 70 different typings for 70 different frameworks.
Nice.
That the community has built.
Beautiful.
And that's fantastic. I mean, yeah. I just love that.
That's
going on.
Great. So great question. Thank you for that. Why does TypeScript not use a closure for private variables? This is what Adrian from the UK wants to know.
Well, because it's too expensive. I mean, it's a well-known technique in JavaScript so basically in JavaScript, the only way that you can get guaranteed privacy is by declaring local variables and then doing closure over those local variables from nested functions. Mm. And then you can return the nested functions out. And now you have a thing that you can call that can access the state, but you can't yourself directly access that state that's been closed over, right? And that's a technique that people use a lot to protect data. The problem with it is that if you do object-oriented programming or when you make instances of objects, you have to make separate function objects for all the methods because they have to close over their own copy of the local state. Mm. So you can't share your function objects in a prototype, and that's one of the things that gives you, like, if you have an object-oriented program, you're going to create a million object instances. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to have a prototype where all of your methods on the objects are stored, because then you have, say you have 20 methods, that means you have 20 function objects instead of 20 million function objects that you would have to create if they were local. And the only way you can access private variables is by making instance-specific copies of these function objects. Mm. So it's like, you know, pick your poison kind of thing, right? I mean, you there is no cheap way in JavaScript today to get guaranteed privacy. There's an expensive way, but we can't make that the default way because now you can't write performant apps in TypeScript.
Exactly.
So now what's going to happen over time is, and certainly there's a proposal for ECMAScript 6 called private names, which would allow you to put properties on objects with private names, with names that you can't say unless someone has shared the secret with you, so to speak.
Interesting.
And that means that you can hide state in objects or put private state on objects. Mm. And of course, once that appears, we will support that in TypeScript. But it's an ECMAScript 6 thing, so it's down the line.
It's interesting. I mean, in some sense, are you concerned at all about sort of one of the great things about JavaScript, and one of the reasons it's so successful is because of some of its wordy nature and its dynamic nature, right? Uh-huh. Clearly, these kind of strange things you can do with the language, how flexible it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So if the language itself starts to become inflexible as it evolves, I mean, how do you deal with that as sort of a language designer, like in the back of your mind? Because I know you're saying, you know, in reality, the language is not going to change dramatically and can then break the whole web and stuff like that. But these things that we're talking about here, classes and the private name stuff and things like that, it's interesting to me. I wonder how that could impact the usefulness of the language and if the language is just going to take an evolutionary leap. Does that question make any sense?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a question for me. It's
of course,
you know,
not. Of course, but as a question for designer.
But as a language designer, I can have opinions about it.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think every language, as it goes through its life cycle, you know, will. Nothing ever goes away in a language. You only accrue new stuff, right? Mm. Because the price of taking stuff away is breaking backwards compatibility, and that just tends to be too high of a price, right?
So sure.
Now there are techniques you can hide it behind a switch or a mode that, you know, modern mode or what do I know, right? But it's still got to be there,
mm.
and people still have to know about it, and you still have to implement it in all the VMs and so forth. And
sure.
So you got to be careful about what you add, because you don't get to take anything away, right? And so that would sort of be my, I mean, I, you know, as a language designer, yeah. you got to be somewhat conservative. You can't just, oh, this time around, we're going to add 50 new features. We're going to everything yeah. in the kitchen sink, right? That's probably not a good way to go, because you never get to get rid of it again.
Totally. So you can't remove your bad ideas. You can hide them.
You can hide them, but yeah. you can't take them away, right? Unless you're willing to break everybody's code.
Cool. Yeah. So we got about 3 more minutes left. We got 3 questions in, and so we're going to do a little fun Halloween exercise with Anders. Like, let's try to keep the answers to 30 seconds or so.
All right.
Or you could say yes or no, and if
yeah.
you want to keep on going, then we'll keep on going, because it's right. you. So Bigsby's sort of making a comment, but anyway, isn't TypeScript an academic and temporarily useful exercise that will cease to have meaning? We already kind of talked about ECMAScript 6. Yeah, it comes out. Is TypeScript still useful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
ECMAScript 6 is not going to do static typing, and that is the biggest feature of TypeScript.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty clear that the ECMAScript committee has no intention of doing static typing either.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I do foresee us adding value even after ECMAScript 6. Lots of value. In fact, probably even more value, you know. So
rock and roll. So Anu wants to know, I found TypeScript faster than calling to the library. Is there any other possibility that it improved performance as it simply compiled to JS? Not sure I understand that question.
Not sure I do either, although I will say that the one thing that's nice about a tool like TypeScript is that if you write classes in TypeScript, we will generate, I think, what is recognized in the industry as the best pattern for writing, for making classes, you know, and so it frees you from knowing what that way is in all of its little intricate details. How do I go about setting up the prototype chain? How do I go about, like, writing my constructor? Where do I put my static members, da-da-da-da-da, all of that stuff. We figure that out. And you can, in a sense, learn from the translation that we do, and you can observe what happens.
Right on.
Yeah. So
finally, the last question is TS non-commercial license compatible with Windows Store apps? Now, we did talk about the fact that, so in other words, when you use TypeScript, you're generating JavaScript.
You're just generating JavaScript.
So I'm not sure I understand the question.
There is there's no shred of TypeScript left in the runnable artifact. So
right
so you can do with it whatever you want.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Anders, it's always great to talk to you.
Pleasure.
And it looks like there's something here coming to steal us away.
All right.
Or maybe, you know, pull us off
the
stage.
Oh, gosh, okay.
But, hey, rock and roll. We'll see you soon. Ah!